welcome to the Helping Families Be Happy podcast, where we explore the often messy world of family, love, and relationships. I'm your host for this podcast, Christopher Robbins, husband, father of nine, founder of Familius Fly Fisherman, and outdoor enthusiast living in the Central Valley of California. We welcome today's guest, Brooke Jordan. Now, Brooke Jordan earned a BA in English and editing from Brigham Young University. She's been working in the publishing industry for 10 years and is the editorial director at Familius. Brooke is the author of over 20 books, including the Lit for Little Hand series, I Dig Bath Time, and How Does Our Food Grow, a collaboration with United Nations organization Kitchen Connection. In addition to writing, Brooke is an award-winning editor and book designer. Brooke and her husband, Tyler, currently live in Cedar Hills, Utah, with their three children and two cats. Today, we're exploring where our food comes from, helping our children understand and appreciate how food goes from farm to plate, aligns with the Familius habits, eat together, and learn together. You can learn more about the Familius 10 Habits of Happy Families by going to the Habit Hub blog on Familius.com. Well, Brooke, thanks for joining the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Christopher.
You bet. Now, we speak every week, but we don't often have the opportunity of having you join us on the Helping Families Be Happy podcast. So that is fun. Now, you've written this book, How Does Our Food Grow? Can you share with us, how did this come about? Where was your interest in exploring how does our food grow?
Sure. So there's a few different angles. I used to be a fitness instructor. So fitness and health has always been an area of interest to me. And then having kids and seeing, you know, having grown up in a culture that's very diet focused and very body focused, I wanted to explore ways of talking about food and learning about food that better prepared my kids for the world and for having a good relationship with food. And every bit of evidence that I've seen, all the research that I've done has pointed to when kids learn about food, when they learn about how it's grown, how what it does in their body, and how to cook with it themselves, that really empowers them to make good choices. So that's kind of a motivation behind this book. And then in talking with Kitchen Connection, and they are really interested in global food systems, in educating in that same way, as well as how our food choices affect the planet, it just kind of seemed like a natural collaboration. And so that's then where this book came to life, that we identified different fruits, vegetables, legumes, and that we could teach kids about how they grow and about what they do in our bodies.
That's wonderful. Now, remind us in our audience how we got connected to the Kitchen Connection. And if I remember right, they're part of the United Nations?
Yes, that's correct. So they're housed under the United Nations. They work with them globally. With Familius, we have actually already published their cookbook. So the cookbook in support of the United Nations was published in 2022. It's a collection of 75 recipes from around the world. Some are recipes from professional chefs. Others are indigenous chefs sharing their culture and their recipes with local ingredients. I mean, it's just a really great cross-section of so many different cultures, so many different local ingredients and recipes that anyone can make and enjoy. So in working with them that way, I saw a lot of alignment in our mission. And the cookbook turned out beautifully. And we actually included several of those recipes as back matter in the children's book.
Oh, the children's book is How Does Our Food Grow? So it actually includes recipes and some material information about these international cuisines that we might experiment with, always trying to broaden our children's horizons. That's one of the things I think we've learned in some of the other books that we published, is that the more broadly that we can have our children explore their palate, the less likely they are to be picky eaters as they grow, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, you know, some of the things we learned. So I live in the Central Valley of California, and what we notice here is there's a tremendous amount of agriculture. And I remember being pretty naive about something growing up in Utah. I asked a friend when I moved to California, I said, can you actually pick an orange off of a tree and just eat it? And he said, well, yes, of course. I was used to picking apples and peaches and plums and cherries, but never a citrus. So help us understand what you've learned and what you think is important to teach children about where food comes from in terms of the types of plants.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think anything that starts a conversation with kids, that's going to get them learning. So I think that kind of anecdote or things like that are such great things to share with our kids. So I think what I've learned here is we start with just where we live. So looking around, what kind of foods grow in the place we live? So I live in Utah, and there are a lot of things that grow here. And so I can say to my kids, look, zucchini grows in our neighbor's garden, and strawberries grow in our garden, and peaches grow really well here. But do we see any pineapples around? And obviously a pineapple has to have a tropical climate. And so then that opens the door to the conversation of, well, certain fruits, certain foods need more rain or need warmer temperatures, while others need much cooler temperatures. And that is, I think, so interesting why it's so important that we maintain the variety of climates that we have around the world, because certain vegetables, certain fruits only grow within those certain areas and within those, whether it's a tropical climate or a more temperate climate. So based on, you know, your kid's age level and what they will understand, I think that's one thing that we can always teach them is these foods probably had to be shipped here, whether they came on trucks just from a different state or on boats or planes from across the world. The food didn't just appear in our fridge, and it probably didn't all grow in our backyard, but we need that global food system to get the variety of things we all really love.
That is true. And the pandemic actually impacted that in terms of the global logistics, being able to get certain fruits. I remember the first time I was traveling in Thailand, and I tasted something called a lychee. And I thought this was the best thing since sliced bread. Man, if I could grow lychee here, I would do it every day. I love that. And I would not have ever experienced that had I not tried something different. Now, as I read your book, I was curious that some food grows on trees. Some food grows in pods. Some food grows underground. Some food grows on vines. Is there something that you found really interesting as you worked on this book?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, again, it comes down to the conversations I want to have with my kids. So there are certain ways that different fruits grow, right? Where an apple, or like you said, an orange, you can pick straight off a tree. But other things, we're actually eating different parts. So we're eating like the flower of the broccoli or the cauliflower plant. Or when we have potatoes, sweet potatoes, they are grown under the ground. So the parts that we see isn't even necessarily the part we think of that we would eat. So that's kind of a fun, maybe just exploration or guessing game. Like, how do you think a fruit or vegetable like this grows? And something too that they can sort of spot, whether it's looking at the book, looking in the illustrations, or if you're in a garden, if you're able to go visit a farm, to be able to spot those things, I think that's, you know, a really educational element to it, to say all these things grow, they come from the earth, but in different ways. And because of the different ways that they grow, some things are going to require more water. Some will require more sunlight. Some will require just more energy overall to grow them. And that's, you know, a conversation that can be had in an ongoing way. But I thought that was a really kind of fun angle when there's really levels to the question of how does our food grow? That first level is, well, this kind of strawberry grows on a vine on the ground. And then in other ways, how does our food grow? Well, it requires water. It requires photosynthesis. And we can kind of build upon that learning structure that way.
So I remember working with a company, an organization called the Family Dinner Project, which was out of Harvard. And I familiarized a book with him called Eat, Laugh, Talk. And it was the intent of this organization was to help families get back to the dinner table together. Mm-hmm. And a story one of the members told me was that a teacher asked her classroom if any student had had fruit for breakfast that morning. And no one raised their hand except for one little boy. And he said, yes. And she said, well, what is it? And he said, a pineapple soda. And what was interesting is that they thought that having a pineapple soda was fruit. So now, in your exploration with the Kitchen Connection and doing these two books, particularly How Does Our Food Grow, did you learn anything that you can share with us about healthy versus non-healthy foods and what we can help our children learn?
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing is when we look at the research, at least what I've kind of taken into my parenting philosophy is I don't necessarily say to my kids, this is a healthy food or this is not a healthy food. I try and really remove the good and bad, the morality from it. Instead, I've learned that it's so much more effective to say, this is what this food does in our body. So a soda, for example, is mostly sugar, and sugar is a carbohydrate. So that does one thing in our body that gives us energy, right? But if we have pineapple, like actual pineapple, we're getting the carbohydrates, we're getting some of that quick energy, but we're also getting so many vitamins and nutrients, vitamin C particularly, and we're getting fiber to keep our tummies feeling good. And so I can dive into all of those things and say, so we like soda, but if that's all we had all the time, our bodies wouldn't feel very good, right? But these other foods do all of these different things in our body. And so then I can kind of leave it at that. And the more we teach our kids what food does in our body, whether it's a protein-rich food or a carbohydrate-rich food or just a nutrient-rich food, then we kind of empower them to make what we'd consider healthy choices later on. And rather than having them feel guilty if they decide to have an Oreo, what we want instead is for them to choose, knowing that certain foods will just make us feel better in the long run.
That's a great way of educating, but what does this food do rather than what necessarily what this food is? Okay, let's talk about some hot points that are happening in the news today. One is water, how water is becoming more scarce. Although the West and the East have been dealing with just dramatic amounts of snow and flooding recently, which is an anomaly after two decades of drought. Another one is just sustainable farming and agriculture. So is there anything you learned that you could share with us about how we can help our children know how to treat our planet with respect and what we can do to make our food sustainable?
Yeah, absolutely. And this was kind of the new element that working with Kitchen Connection really brought to this book, but I think elevated it in a really important way. So one thing that we know is that certain crops require more water than others. However, one crop in particular, which is legumes, so that would be beans particularly, and lentils, similar foods to that. So legumes require the least amount of water and energy to farm. And they also remove the least amount of nutrients from the soil. So you're able to plant those crops again and again with minimal damage to the soil. So when we're thinking of our food choices, we still definitely are going to want a varied diet. We can't stick to just one thing. But we know that beans, when served with rice, creates a complete protein, which is so, so important to solving many of the world's just hunger problems as well. But when you couple that with a lack of water in so many places, and so the ability to grow a very nutrient-rich food with the least amount of impact to the planet, then you're really creating this ideal food source that can feed so many people in a really healthy and sustainable way that is also sustainable for the earth. So that's something I think probably the highlight of what we learned and something that we want to really highlight with the book, just the key role that legumes will play moving forward in the food systems of the world. And then just generally, when we eat in a more, not fully plant-based, I'm not a vegetarian myself, but I try to eat many plant-based foods. And I think that's what we can learn as well, that plant-based foods require a lot less water than, say, farming or raising cows or other livestock. And so when we're able to choose a more plant-based diet, that is another step that we can take toward a healthier planet. I think it's really important to remember that as big as and as daunting as climate change seems, we don't ever want to approach it with our children in a way that's really frightening or overwhelming to them, or put them in a mindset that nothing can ever be done and, you know, that doomsday perspective. So instead, if we can provide them little things that we can do on an individual level, I think that gives us a much more optimistic outlook that we can do something on a day-to-day basis that's healthy for the planet.
Good advice. When you were talking about food, I was thinking about Michael Pollan and his best-selling book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, where he said two things that I always remember. First, eat food, mostly plants, not too much. And the second thing he said, don't eat anything that your grandmother or your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. So, good advice.
Plenty of that going around, right?
Well, thank you so much for taking time to join us today and talk about your new book, How Does Our Food Grow, with The Kitchen Connection, published by Familius. Now, where can our audience find you and your books online?
Yeah, so you can follow me personally. I'm on Instagram at brookjordan.books. And all my books are available at familius.com, on amazon.com, and wherever books are sold.
Wherever books are sold, including your local independent bookstore.
That's right.
So as we conclude today's podcast, I'd like to thank Familius for the support in bringing the podcast to your ears and your heart. We'd be thrilled if you subscribed to the podcast and left us a review. And when you're ready for that next amazing book adventure, we'd be honored if you choose a book from Familius. One step, one book at a time, we can make the world a happier place.